This podcast is supported by The Real Real.
You know what I love most about the holidays? Giving gifts. But not just any gifts. Real gifts. Thoughtful gifts. Oh my God, how did you know gifts? That's why I love gift shopping with The Real Real. The Real Real is the most trusted name in authenticated luxury resale. And it's a holiday shopping secret I'm going to let you in on. Whether it's a surprisingly affordable, pristine condition bag for your BFF, a vintage find that's cool enough for the Gen Zer in your life, or even something your impossible to shop for dad will love. Get used to saying, I found it on The Real Real. Seriously, with over 10,000 new arrivals dropping every day from brands like Gucci, Fendi, Prada, Louis Vuitton, Tiffany & Co., and Cartier, there's guaranteed to be something for everyone on your list. Oh, and did I mention everything's up to 90% off retail?
Get $25 off your first purchase at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com to get your $25 off. TheRealReal.com.
We don't have Timmy today. Timmy is unable to join due to a sickness. He's down with the sickness.
He's in bed, reeling and dealing.
Yeah, so unfortunately he couldn't make it tonight, but our thoughts are with him and we hope he feels better.
We hope he recovers from this unmentionable disease.
I mean, I don't think it's a disease.
Oh, okay.
I think it's more like the flu or RSV or something like that.
Well, we'll have to drop some of that bone broth off later. Maybe it'll make him feel better.
Bacon's bone broth. You can buy it in the podcast interview store. It's $9.99.
Or just break into ounces. Bacon's house and take it out of his freezer.
Root around a little bit.
There you go. All right, so the first bit of listener feedback we got, we'll go with it. It's from my sister, actually. She's an avid listener of the podcast.
Sis. She's the one in Florida, yeah?
Correct.
Yeah.
She wrote in a text to me after this week's episode and said, you should put the songs we play in our episodes on the show notes because people who listen to the show were like, oh, I remember that song. And that was a good idea.
Yep.
And I can even extend that and put it into the podcast and the Spotify playlist that we have.
Absolutely,
so
yeah.
So you can go and check out the songs that we're talking about on that. So
sweet. So summer jams, and then didn't we do, we did the, what was it, the 90s and the 2000s, right?
I think so.
If we were trying to guess.
It's 84, 94, 2004?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So we have that list, and the songs from the show before, we'll do that too.
Cool.
So thanks, sis, for that great feedback.
Yeah.
All right, here's another one. Podcast Envy, dropping a note to say I thought your interview with Jack was really great, and I really enjoyed the balance of humor and getting to know Jack's craft. Great observation by Bacon that, like music, art reflects in the artist's experience. I thought that'd be obvious, but he sometimes comes across as a not smart guy who thinks he's smart.
Nailed it.
Thanks, Todd.
Take five.
So feedback for you. Fucking be better.
Yeah. Be better or shut the fuck up.
Be smarter.
Yeah. Read a book, maybe. Maybe that's what I need to do is read a book. And this one's from Jamie. Dear boys, just finished this week's episode, and I must say you guys seem to have a warped idea of what happened in 2004.
Oh, boy.
Kelly Clarkson won Idol in 2002.
Oh.
So Bacon blaming American Idol for contributing to the change around indie music doesn't work out. Dawson's Creek came out in the 90s and ran until 2003, but it did have a theme song that hit the radio, and there were probably some songs from that and other shows like Everwood in that same time period as well. Not sure Bacon's assumption about 2004 being the change works when you consider Lilith Fair in the 90s, too. Thought-provoking comment.
Yep, very much so. You know what it sounds like to me? It sounds like she needs to either join us on an episode or become one of our staff editors or something.
She can be our researcher.
Yeah, exactly.
When I make some baseless claim, she can actually fact check me in real time.
Yeah. Read back. No, actually, you said this, and that was wrong, Bacon. So this is correct.
But I would like to push back on the Lilith Fair thing. Because, yeah, Lilith Fair did sign indie artists, especially the female ones. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I just feel like I felt like my tone was weird there. I didn't mean to come across
it. No, you better retake that one.
Oh, all right. I don't think we were wrong to say that 2000 was the year that things changed. I'm going to push back on her on this because, yes, Dawson's Creek, the song did hit the radio.
Before the show?
Paula Cole, I think it was.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I don't want to wait.
Yeah. And there was, like, the Lilith Fair thing happened in the 90s and was cool. And they did have, indie artists. But my point was, I think the point of this segment was that after 2004, indie was mainstream because of the exposure from the TV shows.
Getting picked up by the corporations or labels or whatever, I guess.
Yeah, I didn't intend to convey to the audience that I thought that it was like it happened in a vacuum. I don't think it happened in a vacuum. Like,
yeah,
clearly.
I guess what I got from that is I thought it was 2002 that I tried out for American Idol, not 2004. I was like, damn it, how did I screw that up? Because that was the year, it was the first year.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first year. I remember that.
So you must have tried out in 2001, probably.
Whatever. I don't know. It was at the Washington, D.C. Convention Center. And I remember I can picture everything like it was yesterday. But I, you know, stoner brain.
And I don't think our point of you bringing up your audition was to talk about Idol in that moment being the thing, because it wasn't until a few seasons in that they started singing the songs that were on TV.
Sure.
That was my point there too. So maybe I can re-edit that show, that part of the show, for clarity. Apparently, Jamie doesn't think we did a good job.
Fix it for the best
getting
of
our point across.
Yeah, it's all good.
Well, thanks for your feedback, Jamie. I appreciate it.
Yeah, let's get her on the show. Message her back.
Tell her we want her.
All right. Well, I'm not going to say that. This is Podcast Envy.
We got a special guest.
We do have a special guest.
Yeah, what's up?
Our guest today hails from the great state of Maryland. I first saw him at the Revel Media Artist Sessions. It's PJ Skidoo's. He played Hungover You and a song about Caroline's boyfriend.
Yeah. Caroline.
He describes himself and his band as influenced by a lifetime of strangeness, trouble, and eclectic music tastes. He and his band, The Rural Depression, try to make honest music. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Gage Rhodes.
Yeah!
Welcome to the show, Gage.
Thanks for having me, guys.
How psyched are you to be opening for Judah and the Lion at the Fillmore?
Absolutely over the moon.
Because that was a crowdsourced voting thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I felt that I could go different ways about it, just in terms of, you know, you can spend $1 billion doing Facebook or Meta, whatever ads. You can, you know, I could have texted everybody individually, but it was incredibly gratifying to just put out, you know, a very honest post and go, hey, this is maybe the biggest thing that has ever happened to me. If you guys think I deserve it, then, you know, please vote for me. If you don't, you know, there are a bunch of other great bands that you can vote for to get this opportunity. I was blown away by just how many people voted and then messaged me like, hey, voted for you. Can we vote more than once?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's awesome.
You know, people I hadn't heard from in years saw it. And I think it's so easy to see stuff, especially from people that you knew 10, 15 years ago and go, good for them. Don't care.
Yeah.
So to have everybody kind of pull through for me in a huge, huge way, that was deeply, deeply gratifying. And then on the more base side of it, it's just really fucking cool that I get to do it.
Yeah.
And I'm so excited. That's going to be incredible.
Now, are they doing multiple nights, or are you just doing one night or two or what?
They're doing a whole tour. They had a different, a different opener for each night of the tour that was local-ish to the mm-hmm. area. So I'm doing Silver Spring at the Fillmore.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're only doing one night at the Fillmore, and that's October 18th.
Yep.
But,
okay.
Yeah, just a crazy opportunity that kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, with a voting thing like that, I was just kind of on pins and needles for weeks and weeks and weeks.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then I got the email that I got it.
That's amazing. Yeah. That is so cool.
Yeah.
And the reason why I wanted to jump on that so quickly, and I know that this might air after that date, but it is coming up very quickly. It's only, you know, what, like a little over 2 weeks?
Yeah.
I know you're rapidly realizing that.
I know you're ready because you do this often enough. It's kind of like us, like with mm-hmm. the shows that we have. You know, the more you do it, the more it's just kind of, you know, you, especially for like a performance like that, where I don't imagine that you're going to be up there for 2 hours or 3 hours. You know, it's only going to be maybe like 30, 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. So you get to pick like all your best or favorite stuff, and you already know that you're going to knock it out of the park.
That's the hope. It's been tough nailing down a set list, just because it's kind of a rubber hits the road moment. Mm-hmm. And it's not so much my favorite songs. I'm trying to think of, all right, well, you know, this one sounds really good, and this one gets more hits online, so people will know it more. And trying to figure out that stuff without selling out, as it were. Mm-hmm. It's trying to give the audience there a good representation of what we actually sound like, instead of just, you know, they might have heard one song and they might have liked it, they might have hated it, but trying to represent the band realistically. And, you know, I'm not here to trick anybody.
Right.
If they don't like the other ones of my songs, they only like Caroline or something, mm-hmm. You know, then they only like Caroline.
Yeah.
And I'm glad they do. Mm-hmm. But trying to, I don't want to bait and switch people, because a lot of my stuff is pretty sad, and I don't want them to go in being like, oh yeah, I'm going to feel really good. And then yeah, they throw on the record, and it's fun for about the first half. And then it gets to the second half, and they're like, oh man, why did I put this on again? But
so you're going up on stage with the Rural Depression.
Yeah. We have to strip down a little bit, but, yeah, it's going to be all the guys from the Rural Depression. And I say guys, this iteration of the Rural Depression is a bunch of guys. Mm-hmm. But I like it. I like having the band a little bit separate. So that way any group that I'm with is the Rural Depression. It's like the the E Street Band.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I try to play with my friends, and I try to play with, you know, the most talented people that I can find on any given night. So it's great to just be able to have one totally different configuration one night, and then the next night, different people are available, so it's a completely different sound. Mm-hmm. That's really fun. That's really exciting to me. And I think everybody that plays with the band brings something different than I had the last time that I played with them.
Yeah.
So
now, when you prepare for something like this, are you strictly doing originals, or are you going to throw in a couple of covers?
For this one, I think it's going to be all originals, because this is a, you know, a bucket list gig.
Yeah.
So I they're going to like me or hate me.
I was going to say
either way,
either love me or hate me.
And I don't know if throwing in a clever cover or something, what does that achieve in the long run? They might, they might enjoy that if they want to listen to covers, mm-hmm. but I'm not going to outdo the original band. I'm not going to outdo the other bands on the bill. All I really have is just my stuff. And unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on who you ask, it stands on its own merits.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it lives and dies by however people, you know, come across it and how they feel about it. Mm-hmm.
I guess we can go back to the beginning.
Bacon loves to start with the chronology.
Get in the way, way back machine.
Yeah, man. I'd like to
show us your birth certificate.
I want to know what the artist's experiences are, so I can sound like a not smart person who thinks she's smart.
Jamie, she got you on that one, didn't she?
No, that wasn't Jamie. That was some dude named Todd.
Oh, that was the other guy. Yeah, that's right. Sorry.
Write in again, Todd. I dare you. Anyway.
Todd, please be nice about me. I don't care what you say about them. Please be nice to me.
I will not be able
to handle it. I'm incredibly fragile, Todd.
So you were born and raised in Maryland, right?
Yeah, right over on the Eastern Shore. Mm-hmm.
Did you start music young, or is that something you came into as you got older, teenager, adulthood?
I think I was 12 or 13 when I really got the live music bug, as mm-hmm. it were. I was 12 or 13 when I first really got into playing guitar, and from there I found a lot of the old blues guys, you know, B.B. King, and that kind of changed my trajectory a little bit from wanting to be, you know, Kirk Hammett and James Hetfield and, you know, all those guys, Steve Vai and Joe Satriani. I used to want to really do that.
Okay.
And then I listened to my grandfather gave me, I forget which album it was, but it was a B.B. King album. And it was one of the ones where he does a solo that's maybe three notes. And I was like, oh, you don't have to play every available note. In you the can spectrum. Just play three. Like, you don't have to sing and play at the same time. You don't have to stand and play at the same time. No. You know, just he that kind of enlightened me in retrospect to the just kind of doing your own thing. And if you're the best, if you're the only one doing it, you're the best one at it.
Yeah.
But
which inspires others to either emulate it or try to beat you at it or something.
Yeah. I hope no one's trying to beat me at the end of the day because they're going to win.
Yeah.
But yeah, the blues started out, got really into that, and then got a little bit older and started getting into acoustic music. This was right around the time of Mumford and Sons and Avid Brothers. I was really young and I opened for David Mayfield Parade, just that kind of stuff. And I started doing that more and more, and that kind of carried me into adulthood a little bit.
Always a singer with the guitar, or did you start just playing guitar?
I started just playing guitar, and then I realized, I say this on the mic all the time, but I realized that girls didn't want to hear me play an unplugged electric guitar at them at parties. They were not. That's how it felt every time I was usurped by someone else that could actually play acoustic guitar.
Yeah,
and they play songs that I don't know. They play songs that people recognized and wanted to hear instead of
Wonderwall.
Yeah. Instead of me just playing like Enter Sandman or, you know, some Steve Vai deep cut.
Yeah.
That absolutely required an amp and a full pedal board. I was just like, no, you don't. You gotta listen to it because I was young and stupid. But
to be like, I'll be right back. I got my pedal board in the car.
Yeah. As a drummer, I can relate. You know what I mean? Because the guy with the guitar beats the guy without a drum kit any day.
I mean, you can't just do this on the countertop.
I mean, I could slap my thighs, I suppose. But
just make you hot, babe.
Yeah. Right? Do you like how I slap my thigh?
Very, very few. Very few romantic partners. Very few romantic partners for the kid that's super into hand boning.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not a. It's not a great look. Not a pro strat to. Get popular in school. Maybe it is now. I don't know.
So you were like, me. And you were like, oh, I can sing. Maybe I should add that.
Ooh, no. It was, I say it a lot. There were a lot of years of just sucking. I was just not good. Yeah. I was objectively bad. I found a video of me, God, I must have been 14 or 15, and trying my damnedest to cover Taylor Swift.
Okay.
And it, cause that's what was blowing up on, on YouTube and all that stuff at the time. It was just acoustic, folky indie covers of everything.
Yeah.
So I was like, gonna ride that wave, get viral real quick. And it sucked. It was so bad. It was
earlier videos have been deleted.
I thought I had gotten them all, and I found this one. I was like, oh, man.
Oh, no.
Why won't it delete?
To give you a sense of how long ago it was, this was on a like a full digital camera.
Oh, nice.
This was like a point-and-shoot digital camera that I had used for that stuff. And
lots of pixels.
Both of them. It was it was all 2 pixels.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was very, very bad for a long time. And then one day it kind of clicked.
Your voice finally dropped.
My voice dropped super early. I was fifth grade, sounded like this.
Okay. And that didn't sell it before the guitar and before.
No,
hey,
I did think I did heavily consider going into voice acting or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's
in
still
fifth grade.
In fifth grade, fifth grade me did not have like many career prospects. So I was like, well, I have a deep voice.
I could be on The Simpsons.
Maybe people could pay me to like call their parents and like act like a teacher or something. It never happened because my voice would crack all the time because I was in fifth grade.
Cover blown. And then that's, what was that? Billy Madison. He's like, you blew it.
So how old were you when you would say that you found your voice?
Last year.
Not too far off. I really do feel like I more recently in the past couple of years have gotten a better understanding of the limits and the capabilities of what I can do vocally. I know what I can do, I know what I can't do, I know where I can be useful and what I can do and where it's kind of a losing game, mm-hmm. or diminishing returns, especially in the studio. Belting stuff or like yelling stuff, you got to hit that the first time, first, second time. Otherwise, you just got to circle back another day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when you're not doing an opening for Judah and the Lion or playing mm-hmm. these really cool songwriter series that you're doing, are you playing like, you know, quote unquote, regular mm-hmm. gigs at like bars and other places just to kind of, you know, fill the bank account a little bit to
almost constantly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I do it full time. I do it for a living, which it's own kind of lifestyle, but yeah, I do a lot of bar gigs and, you know, I call them wallpaper gigs.
Mm-hmm.
I call them wallpaper gigs because sometimes you are just,
yeah.
You're there to be live music,
yeah. Yep.
And that's all anyone's business is. It's just cool.
It's tough.
That dude has a guitar and he ostensibly he's playing it. Cool.
Yep.
It adds to the ambiance or whatever. I think I was out with some friends and I think some friends were in the band that were playing at this bar, and they played Mr. Brightside or something by Jimmy Eat World, like The Sweetness or The Middle or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me just through the roof happy.
Yeah. Mm.
And I kind of had that, it was like most times, a jumble of emotions where I was just like super thrilled that they were playing this. And then very quickly had the realization that that is what I do.
Mm-hmm.
I also am in their shoes in the sense that, yeah, if I play something that, you know, maybe they haven't heard in a while, I play Teenage Dirtbag sometimes.
Yeah.
Nice. And I it's a bit because I have 1,000 bits at all times for any occasion.
Nice.
But I'll go, hey, we got any big Wheatus fans in the building? And it's dead silent. Yeah. Nope. You know.
I do that with our kazoos. I'm like, okay, who brought their kazoo? And then we just start playing kazoo songs. And I'm like, okay, sucks for you guys. Yeah, I'm playing the kazoo.
This could have been interactive.
Yeah. But it's just a bit. It's just to get people to giggle or to, you know, pay attention. How often do you travel outside of the area for gigs?
I'm kind of just down to go anywhere now.
Mm-hmm. Do you do private events? Do you ever get picked up for that kind of stuff? Yeah. For you or you and the band?
Mostly for me solo. I love doing private events. Even more so when it's just, hey, we saw you play somewhere. We're having a party. We want you to play music for it. And it's so much fun.
Yeah.
I finally get to be on the other side and like, no guys, I'm playing guitar at this party and I'm allowed. Not only that, people want me to play guitar at this party. Because I think, too, with private events, what I've found anyway is the people involved actively want you there. Mm-hmm. So they are more willing to, if I ask, a restaurant or a bar or something like, hey, is there any way that I can get reserved parking or something?
they'll tell me where to put my reserved parking in so many words.
But you're speaking my language right there. Reserve parking, please.
Reserve parking, it, or at least, depending on where the venue or whatever, tell me exactly where to park.
Yeah.
Oh, that's my first question when I walk in there. Yeah. Where can I park? Especially in places like D.C. or Arlington or parts of Maryland where you're like, where? How am I supposed to do this? Yeah.
I'm not saying I'm a high anxiety individual, but I have anxiety about parking. Like, the first thing when somebody, Brian has asked me before, hey, are you free to do a gig at XYZ on the X date? And I'm like, what's the parking sitch? That's my first question every time.
You know what's funny is I've been helping another local venue provide them with artists on Thursdays and Fridays between now and mid-November. And one of the artists that I reached out to was David Sparrow. And he said, you know, because he asked me, the gig is in Arlington and it's in a spot that's very busy and like street parking is scarce. And so you have to drop your gear off and you got to go find parking and you got to walk all the way back. Right. And so David goes, you know, I share Bacon's opinion on parking anxiety. That was his exact term.
That's
anxiety.
Awesome.
He said, so what's the parking situation with this thing? And I was like, oh my God. That's so amazing. Great. So David's a listener.
Hell yeah, David. More power to you and me. May your anxiety dwindle.
I'm truly in the exact same way. And there's a lot of stuff, maybe not the most popular opinion to have on this show. There's a lot of stuff in DC I just won't. You know, it's
like, is it worth it, right?
I parked my car here. And I haven't stopped thinking about if I'm going to get towed.
Where did you park?
Just on a corner behind another car.
Oh, okay.
As long as it's not yellow, you're good. Yeah.
It was dark out. I'll never know.
Oh, man.
It was in front of the mailboxes, I think.
Oh, well.
Or the I don't want to call it the hydrangea. The hydrant.
It was directly opposite the hydrant.
Yeah.
Okay, oh, you should be fine.
Yeah, you'll be right. They'll just put the hose through your window.
I will never stop thinking about it.
But I'm with you. I've parked in places the entire gig. I'm like, I hope I didn't get towed. Because it's expensive as fuck to get towed.
Well, everything that you just made goes to get your tow out of the
And probably then the some more some.
Oh, yeah.
That's why I park where I park at the airport. If I have to fly somewhere.
Where do you park at the airport, Bacon?
I park in the closest garage to the terminal as possible without it being ridiculously expensive. But, you know, not like in the super duper valet parking, but like it takes me 10 seconds to get from my car to the terminal.
So why don't you Uber to the airport? I'm assuming Dulles,
do you really want to get into
BWI.
All this?
I know you went to BWI very recently for a different reason.
I did,
This is parking pod.
Yeah, this is the parking pod. So I drive myself to the airport because I am in control of my schedule that day, and it's important that I get on the plane. So the only way for me to not
You're speaking
be...
speaking his language, I think.
The only way for me not to be in a place of fight or flight for the entire day is to have that control.
Wow.
Yeah. You get me. You understand me.
Soulmates, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, but with the way that it works now, taxi, Uber, Lyft, otherwise, like if they don't show up on time, there's going to be another one behind them. You just cancel it and move on to the next one, right?
I am unreliable, and me depending on somebody else to be reliable is just a folly.
It's a system of
faults.
It's a
bridge too far.
Yeah, if I can't rely on myself, how am I going to rely on some jackass in a car? I can't do that. Okay. I got to.
You know what's funny when Uber
and they might kidnap me. So.
Well, that's possible.
You know, popular guys this size and this handsome
are kidnappable. You are a snack.
I'm dessert. Let's
you're
be
a
real.
Tasty treat. Speaking of the songs that you're going to be playing or that you play often, but in particular, you said that you were going to be playing a lot of originals or all originals for the October 18th show opening for Judah and the Lion. How many songs have you actually released? I know that you've done some recordings. You just came out with an album, right, earlier this year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was this year.
I think it was this year.
That one was so long in the making that I have truly forgotten when it entered the public consciousness.
Yeah.
Released ever, I think I probably have 20 or 30 songs out there to listen to.
I know that you had several singles that went out.
Yeah.
I don't know if those were part of other, all part of larger projects or kind of their own independent projects.
There were a few. Caroline was one of them.
Yeah.
That I intended for it to be part of the larger album, Carrion. And then that album took 3 years to finally put out. But yeah, the as far as albums go, I think there's the two on Spotify, and then a couple singles, and then some live versions, I think.
I recently came across some information that I thought was really interesting. And it's this guy who's an audio engineer. He said, you don't need to master your recordings because masters were meant to make
like vinyl.
The sound from the tape onto the vinyl and everything be balanced and make sense. But in this age of digital, we don't need that anymore. You just need to have a good EQ. Somebody does a really good EQ on your music and you're good to go.
He is more than welcome to do that. What I'm not going to do is chance that.
Right.
You know, I think it's a joke that a lot of people say, but, you know, we spend all of this money for people to go like mm-hmm. this with their phone.
Yeah.
And I think I can definitely see where someone is able to do that.
Or
Or, you know, someone out there has far better ears than I do. Mm-hmm. And they're well versed enough in it. For me, I want to see it all get balanced and bounce mm-hmm. down. And, you know, I'm sure that there is merit to it.
Mm-hmm.
I am not in the field of groundbreaking.
Yeah.
I
understand.
I think it depends on, well, I guess the answer you'll probably get from other professionals in the space and from us as the artists. It depends on what your audience is and what platform you intend on having your music listened on or through. Right. So if you're doing something like Bandcamp, no, it doesn't really matter, you know, because nobody's listening to Bandcamp on their car stereo.
As long as it's EQ'd correctly, yeah.
Sure. But yeah, the mixing part obviously is very important, and the mastering, even going through the mastering process, one of the guys that I've worked with through mastering, he asks, you know, what are you intending on having this music, mm-hmm. vinyl, CD, phone, you know, streaming platforms kind of thing. And you just tell them, you know, all or some or only one or whatever your intention is. And then they kind of tailor the mastering to that. But it's the final step in the process. And truthfully, a master to a song is like $50-$200. So after spending thousands of dollars in the studio, it's not the most expensive ticket.
It's not the thing that's going to break the bank.
No.
Yeah.
So you just fucking do it.
Yeah.
And the other thing too, is that they can also catalog your music. They can, you know, tag it to whatever. It's not the UPC, but it's
ISDN?
IS something. It's something like that. I can't remember. Too many acronyms, too many things to think about. But they can tag it to that, so then it's already cataloged and you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, okay.
So
yeah. Learn something new every day.
Yeah.
A lot of them do like the metadata or whatever, so that the stuff that when you pull it up on your phone, it pops up on your car stereo screen or something.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just all that stuff that I do not, could not care to to learn how to, you know, some mm-hmm. long pro, like I'm gonna pay you, you're gonna make the whole thing louder and balanced, like the whole record is gonna be one
right.
volume,
right?
And you're gonna do the metadata. Just absolutely do it. Yeah. Dog,
save me the time of figuring it out myself.
Yeah.
The name of your band,
the Rural Depression.
Yeah.
So is that a product of your brain or is that a product of them?
Where did the name come from?
Yeah, where does the name come from? And how did you decide to not be part of the Rural Depression and call yourself Gage Road and the girl?
Was it your parents that decided to call you that, or did they, were you?
I think you're misunderstanding my question.
I know, I'm joking.
That's from the very beginning.
Hell, everything
the light
touches.
Do we not know each other well enough?
exactly. So to answer both questions, I was born in 96. Pet Sematary came out in theaters in 94, mm-hmm. on VHS in 95, somewhere thereabouts. I was born in 96. My parents will deny it forever. You do the math. That's all I'm saying.
Fair enough.
It's named after Pet Sematary.
Yeah.
It's, I just was.
Yeah.
The Rural Depression came about, and I was just doing shows under Gage Rhodes.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I had a band, I think it was the Gage Rhodes Band.
Mm-hmm.
But I was at a songwriter showcase kind of a thing. And me and my friends, Sam Pugh and Dana Denise, we had all played this thing, and we're all pretty emotional music, not always super upbeat stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And someone goes, "Hey, you guys from the Eastern Shore are like really good, but you're all so sad. Why?" And I was like, "Well, that's the specific brand of depression that you get growing up just fully surrounded by cornfields and nothing else." And I was like, "It's the Rural Depression." And I was like, "Shit, write that down. Write that down. Write that down."
That's a great band name, or the name of a storm, the Tropical Depression.
And
that's happening right now.
Yeah.
it felt to me, it felt like one of those, you know, like the Dust Bowl, or like, you know, the Great Depression, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But the Rural Depression just kind of felt like a thing. And, you know, mm-hmm. anyone that has grown up fully surrounded by cornfields goes, "Oh, yeah, you feel
cornfields
it.
Cornfields and chicken coops."
Exactly.
And,
yeah. You feel it when you enter a town like that. Mm-hmm. And you look to the left, there's a Dollar General. You look to the right, there's another Dollar General. And that's it.
Yeah.
And you go, "Oh, man."
And liquor stores.
Liquor stores.
To help with the Rural Depression.
Pretty much.
So based on your photograph, like some of the photographs I've seen of your promotions and things you've done and the band name, I kind of get like a "Oh Brother, Where Art Thou" vibe from you and the music too. And I think that's amazing. I think that's great. I love it.
Thank you.
Is that kind of like, am I correct in estimating that vibe?
1,000%.
Okay.
When I was in high school and starting to get into music other than, you know, heavy stuff and like prog rock.
Mm-hmm.
I think for the first time watched Oh Brother, and just fell in love.
Yeah. It's great. Wow.
And it was just like
nail on the head.
It is incredibly gratifying to, when people just kind of out in the wild are like, "Hey, just do you like that? Do you like that?"
Yeah.
It's like, "Yeah, I'm glad it's coming, it's shining
you
through."
Was a toad.
it's just such a good, I mean, such a brilliant movie. But I think until then, I had, you know, kind of the long hair. Mm-hmm. I had hair down to my shoulders for a long time, and you know the emo swoop, whatever.
Oh yeah.
And then I saw "Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?" And I was like, "Pomade, huh?"
Yeah. Hmm.
Dapper Dan.
And I was like, "Well, George Clooney's doing that look."
Yeah.
Maybe I could do that, and you know, combine with other that whole aesthetic coming back with Mumford and Sons look like they just rolled out of you know, whatever
the Rural Depression.
Exactly. Yeah. So I was like, maybe I'll get my hair cut short and, you know, start putting pomade in it and, you know, slicking it back and doing all this stuff. And from there, kind of went downhill. And
yeah,
I've always enjoyed downhill? Bluegrass. Well, it's kind of, it feels downhill.
I would like to venture that it might be uphill.
I think
I'm going to bring back the emo bangs. Yeah. 2024.
Honestly, I dig the vibe. You know, I don't know who your photographer is or if you just have a phenomenal ability to pinpoint certain imagery in a video and just be like, that's it. That's the clarity I'm looking for. Let's color code it. Let's make it look cool. But whatever it is that you're doing specifically with the tone, with, you know, the clothes that you wear, I imagine you take all of these things very seriously. You're trying to present yourself in such a way to be taken seriously.
I'm kind of two minds with it because I take my music and all the things that come with it very, very seriously. But I take myself not very seriously at all.
Like when you're on stage, like talking to people or just in life?
mostly in life. You know, and that's, I have found it's kind of a necessary thing because a lot of my stuff does deal with, you know, heavier experiences and heavier emotions. So if you just do that and I'm stone cold on stage and I, you know, am just dumping what this song is about, this super sad thing, this song is about this super sad thing, and you should feel, you know, every ounce of all this stuff, sure, they might get a more authentic or a more real
experience
of the songs, but they're going to be fucking bummed out and they're not going to come to a Gage Roadshow ever again.
Right.
Well, no, has that truly been the case at some point that makes you think that way? Or is that just you kind of thinking that that's how you're looking at yourself from the outside?
A few times before I really got, I wasn't playing nearly as many gigs of any kind. There were a few.
Because you were playing only sad songs.
Well, but like I wasn't playing nearly as many cover gigs or anything like that.
Okay.
But I do have some more upbeat ones. But I came to the realization after a few shows where I was, you know, I was going through some stuff maybe, or just wasn't very talkative on stage. Just kind of introduced the song and here's what it's about. Here's the song. I had a few times, very well-meaning, very kind people come up to me afterwards and like do the two-handed handshake. And they got real close and they were like, hey man, it's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what do you mean? I had a great night tonight. Like, I'm having a great time.
They're just songs, man.
And I was realizing, you know, it made it seem as though I was just perpetually in this pit of
just
despair.
Just like dumping.
And just like really having a hard time for God and everybody to see.
That's when you take the tip jar and you're like, I know. Thank you so much for coming tonight.
I would be way better if I had, I don't know, $20 more.
Help me pay for my therapy.
But no, now I do take it very seriously. The clothing, less so now. I sort of painted myself into a corner a little bit because I genuinely love Western wear. And I love workwear. I'm of the school where if I buy, I will buy once, cry once. I want the pair of jeans that I buy for, you know, however much, I want them to last at least that money amount long.
Yeah.
Sure.
So I gravitated to, you know, cowboy boots. They're just work boots that I don't have to tie.
Yeah.
Do you not know how to tie shoes?
I do, but why would you?
Right.
I don't know.
Why waste the energy?
I thought Velcro was making a comeback. It's not.
Only for you.
Maybe when I'm older. Yeah. Are you afraid to go to outer space?
Am I afraid to go to outer space? Nobody's offered yet, but I think...
Elon Musk was like,
well,
Gage, we could use your services on planet Mars.
If Elon Musk is like, oh brother, where art thou?
Oh brother, you art thou.
If it's NASA and they go, you know, we need you, I cannot fathom why they would. It depends on the mission. Depends on the mission to Mars.
Maybe we have to set the tone, you know?
If it's an Independence Day situation, I'm down.
Here it is.
But
we've set up a colony on Mars.
Wow.
It's mostly National Guard airmen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And they want to do a USO tour.
I'm so in. Are you kidding me? I'm so in.
Yeah.
A USO tour to Mars, get out.
I'm but in. It's going to so take doing. A year and a half out of your life to do this one concert.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, a year and a half in
preparation,
in space.
Travel. Everything and the pay then is coming not great. Back, and it's not great.
The pay is not great.
It's a grand. That's it. It's $1,000.
A grand total.
It's, no, wait. Yeah. It's $1,000 in Mars bucks.
Yeah. It only works at the Mars Colony and
yep.
in the NASA gift store when you're done.
Only if you come back.
Yep.
Yeah. You might be able to trade it, but I think it's like, 50 cents on the dollar here.
I think I'm doing it, especially if I'm the first one.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm doing it just to have it, even if I die, like whatever.
Yeah.
Like they're going to put a picture of me there.
Yeah.
I want to have my picture on Mars at least.
Yeah. That'd be cool.
I'm definitely doing it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Just any part of me when someone in, they have to be someone in a lab coat because it's space. Because it's space. Come on.
That's where they filmed Doom. Okay. No, so
Doom the video game or
Doom D-O-O-M. So part of the reason why I ask, I have
spaceship.
I have an innate fear. Exactly. I have a spaceship. It's out back. If we leave now, we can make it in time.
We're going. I just hope you know we're going.
All right. So these PBRs aren't normal PBRs.
Now your body chemistry is perfectly balanced for space flight.
Exactly. We put extra carbonation in them.
That's why I've been burping so much. These are space beers.
Space beers, that's right.
It's like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. The fizzy lifting drink.
So you said, it would be okay if you died. I can just see your obituary, Gage Rhodes in an attempt to sing Hung Over You on Mars, perished in space. Ironically, he was hungover.
From the two space beers. They don't let you take more with you on the shuttle.
Oh, beat city, man.
He finally made it back to the regular stock.
But not to get morbid about it, but what's a better way to die than spaceship explosion?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's the things that you can't control. It's like, how much cooler could it get?
Yeah.
Like, I would love to die in a spacesuit, no matter what the context is. I'd love to just be in a spacesuit when I die.
So out of the two, now knowing that you are a Dungeons and Dragons
dungeon master.
Yeah, you're a dungeon master. Now this doesn't necessarily have to do with that, but in that same kind of concept, you've seen some anime, you've seen some, what's the word I'm looking for? Animated films.
Mm.
So do we want to go the DreamWorks or, Pixar route, or do we want to go the anime route?
What's the anime question?
So you want that one?
Cause right. I don't know much honestly of DreamWorks Pixar or, so it depends on the anime question.
Kamehameha or Shoryuken?
Oh.
Fuck you. I thought long and hard about all of these questions. Bacon doesn't know what I was planning to ask. That's why he's laughing. And I know that they're not necessarily both TV shows, but they are both video games.
It's got to be Dragon Ball Z for me.
Yeah.
Dragon Ball.
I knew he would know.
Hadouken is Mortal Kombat?
Street Fighter. No. Shoryuken. Same move.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Street Fighter.
Indeed.
Yeah, it's got to be Dragon Ball.
Yeah.
It's.
Did you watch the series from start to finish when you were a kid?
I attempted to. It was on Toonami, and I think that was
Take
later than I was technically allowed to be awake. So I caught like little pieces, and I was like, "That shit looks badass."
Yeah,
damn, he's doing. This guy's got a tail. That's a badass.
There's some crazy stuff going on right now.
Did not get to find anything more out about it until like middle school, when someone was like, "Hey, this is called anime," and I was like. Okay. Hell yeah.
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 Dragon Ball Z, baby.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Did you watch it to completion?
No.
No.
I'm not saying phrasing.
Are we doing phrasing? Is that something we're doing?
Are we not doing phrasing anymore?
Bacon's Bone Broth, brought to you by. That should be our it's next happening. Thing. Oh, brought to man. You by phrasing. Anyway, all right, fuck it, Gage. It was awesome that you joined us tonight.
Yeah, man.
Cheers.
Thank you so much for coming out. Making the trek.
Let me talk for 3 hours.
Yeah, man. Well, is there a website or Instagram or something where people can find you that if they want to check out your schedule?
It should just be at Gage Rhodes, which is GageRhodes, all one word. It looks like Gage Rhodes.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's how my mind read it.
Yeah, it's 1 in 3.
I'm neuro spicy, so that's well.
When I first made it, people were like, "How'd you like? What is your Instagram thing?" I was like, "It's my name."
And it's Gager Odes.
It's Gager Hodes. Like, yeah, sure. If that helps you remember, it's Gager Hodes. That's when the exhaustion with social media started and it hasn't waned.
I can understand that.
But yeah, just there. I'm putting out a live video from the album release. It should be October 9th, I think we're putting it out, through Spilling Pictures video. And it's going to be, it's one of the ones that we jam for like 8-10 minutes on. We get super, super weird.
Undoubtedly good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot, Gage.
Thank y'all.
Do you want to say it? I usually say it. So you say, take us home. But you say it in dramatic fashion, however you feel.
Take us home.
This podcast was produced and engineered by Michael Bacon in cooperation with Revelry Media Productions. Video provided by Brian Johnson, also known as AzureVox. Please like and subscribe to stay up to date on our latest episodes. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at podcast RNV and on TikTok at podcast.nv. Send us your thoughts over email at feedback@podcastnv.com. See you soon.